Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine. As we like to say, I think it's well documented, in fact, the greatest baseball podcast in America. With my co-host, Pat Brennan, I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer, and our terrific producer behind the scenes, Phil Didion. Pat, our guy Chase Burns kind of got his nuts kicked in yesterday, didn't he, in Boston?
Yeah, a little bit.
We didn't expect that, did we?
No, but as you correctly noted, the night of his first start against the Yankees, and again in your post-game coverage after the Chase Burns implosion, these starts aren't going to define his career, but the Red Sox game was definitely a step back, or it's going to be a moment where they have to hit pause with Chase to whatever extent they can.
Or you watch that game.
Did
the Red Sox know what was coming?
I know.
Keep in mind who their manager is.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You're not suggesting anything nefarious.
No, but you know what? You know what? What was funny is, yes, it looked like those guys knew what was coming, whether it was him tipping his pitches or just great scouting reports, you know, some version of tipping his pitches, right, where they recognized a behavior where they knew either a slider or a fastball was coming, because it sure as hell looked like they knew what was coming. They were on everything. They were, I mean, you're talking about like 90, 100 mile an hour. Shoot, the hardest hit of the inning off of him was probably the out that almost killed Matt McClain, hit right at him. And so what's interesting is after the game, Tito didn't rule that out. And not only that, but he said, that's always something you got to look at. We'll look at it, because they were looking hard. It looked like, you know, you didn't know. You don't know if he was tipping his pitches or they knew what was coming. And he said, Cora is one of the best at that. So, after the fact, I thought, wait a minute, wasn't Cora the guy? Yes.
Yeah. So,
I don't know that he was referring to that, but you get where I'm going.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to discount the skill of the Red Sox.
They couldn't hit a damn thing. They haven't hit since Devers was traded, and they'd lost 7 of 8 coming in, mostly because they weren't scoring.
Well, to your point, I think there were, you know, you can't. Social media is a cesspool. I think regardless of the platform, your platform of choice, it's a cesspool. But there are some pretty smart fans out there, and I saw some really compelling cases for Chase Burns, at the very least, tipping his pitches. Some interesting video breakdowns. And I think my point here is that I think when even an above average fan with access to multimedia tools, you know, when those people can pick it out, you start to think, well, maybe the professionals also see what Chase Burns is doing. So I think it, and there were a lot of numbers. There were a few numbers, I think, to suggest, like whiff rate. Chase Burns had virtually none. Apparently that's highly suggestive of the Red Sox knowing what was coming. So, I mean, Gordon, here's a true question. I know you're not Derek Johnson, the Reds pitching coach, but you know, you've seen stuff like this in your career. My first question last night, once I accepted the idea that, yeah, maybe Chase is tipping his pitches in a really obvious way, is this something they can get fixed before his next start? Because they're in the middle of a really important week here.
Yeah, I think that's the good news, that this isn't some kind of deeper issue, or that, you know, I mean, he had stuff. His velocity certainly was there. You know, he had some movement on his pitches. Now, he was also missing, so that's part of it too.
Yeah.
But I think But one of the things that happened was he walked the first guy, and then every other miss was in the zone. So you compound that with what we think might be the fact that they had an idea what was coming, and now all of a sudden it's batting practice. So the good news is that if you can identify those cues, you can probably work. You can certainly work on it. You can probably do something about it before the next start. I expect that to be something that by now, less than 24 hours later, they've already identified this and they know what they're working on. And the other thing is, you know, don't miss in the zone.
you know what else I was thinking, as the Reds actually came back and made it competitive for at least through the middle section of that game, the middle three innings of that game last night, you know, if Chase can handle this speed bump mentally, he's going to be okay, because
yes,
it's not going to get a whole lot. It almost literally can't get worse than what he went through last night. And for someone of his skill level, I don't think it will in the entire, I
but
feel
the
comfortable
challenge
saying,
will that lineup he's going to face next might be the toughest of the three. In his
sure.
first three
I mean,
starts.
No, but I mean, he's going to have.
For those who don't know, that's Philly.
He's going to have to be sharp. There's no doubt. And they will be, I mean, they'll be licking their chops for these tells that he may be offering. But I'm just talking about in terms of overcoming the hurdle that was last night in his second career big league start, you know, one third of an inning. Yikes. At Fenway Park. Yikes. You know,
nine batters to get one out,
forcing forcing the team into a bullpen game at the outset of what is still, I mean, it's not the outset of anything, it's the outset of a road trip, but they're in the middle of this very important stretch, which we'll talk about later. And you dive deep into your bullpen right away, first day on the road. I think if he can come back from a start that was, you know, basically that bad, this guy's going to be okay. And I'll be interested to see. Like Terry said, you quoted him after the game as saying something to the effect of, it's going to be really interesting to see how he bounces back in Philly. And it will be.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, there are a couple of observations post-game. We know this is a kid that has a lot of fire, a lot of competitive juices when he's out there. He shows it. He wears it on his sleeve a lot. He loves, like, embracing these challenges. And we saw that against the Yankees, right? He came right after him.
Oh, yeah.
He was quite a bit deflated after this game. I mean, they wound up scoring, I think, six runs, which should be enough to win a game if your pitching's competitive. Yeah. They got to Garrett Crochet for five of those runs. That says something. And so I think he feels like he kind of let the team down. But I do think he's a strong-minded, sharp guy. Like, he knows how to pitch, for one thing. It's going to be a matter of trusting moving forward, trusting what everybody else knows is elite stuff. And just, you're right, just getting his mentality back. I think there's a good chance that he'll do that. Now it's just a matter of fixing the mechanics issues that might have been tipping off some of those pitches. Hey, by the way, when you look at that game, that was a fascinating game. Not only like it was entertaining. If you didn't have a stake in who won the game, it was kind of entertaining from a Fenway Park standpoint, because everything that you know Fenway Park for came into play, including an inside the park home run off of that little Bermuda Triangle they got out there in center field, and another home run that curled around the pesky pole, which is only barely 300 feet down the right field line. You had two singles off the monster. I mean, classic Fenway. And so it was kind of a fun, quirky game to watch that way. But the other thing is they were down 7-0 coming out of that first inning. They got it back to 7-4, had a runner on third. Let me look at my scorebook here.
Yeah, sure.
Because I want to say what inning this was. It was, here it is, fifth inning. So they come back from 7-0 to 7-4, and runner on third, first and third, Ellie De La Cruz at the plate with one out.
Right.
He hits a ball to short and stumbles out of the box. So they're able to complete the double play and beat him by half a step to a step. If he doesn't stumble out of the box, he beats it out. They score another run. It's 7-5 with Ellie De La Cruz at first base and two outs. And Austin Hayes up, who, by the way, hit a triple and a home run in this game. So they were within a whisker of being down 7-5. In what inning did I say that was? The fifth. Making it a two-run game in the fifth. And then you start using your bullpen different, if that's the case. It was just a classic Fenway game. It was crazy. It was fun to watch, but, you know, not a fun result if you're a Reds fan.
Yeah, I think it was good for MLB in terms of offering a showcase. That was the free free game of the week on MLB TV.
Oh, was it?
No, free perfect. Game of the day. Free game of the day, whatever it was.
Oh, okay.
I think, you know, Terry Francona is not going to take any moral victories from last night, I think. He said that. But
he said, we're not here for I can't remember the words he used, but essentially for feel good moments. We're here to win games.
Yeah, I would say we're not here for ham sandwiches. Yes, it's not bad. There were some positives that I saw, just given the state of the game, after the first inning, and you're thinking in turn, I'm thinking I already offered the one thought about Chase Burns. It's going to be interesting to see how he comes back. If he can, I will be impressed. Just take steps forward from last night in Philly, and I will be impressed. The other thing is they had 8 at-bats left, and they used all of them to make it competitive last night. And you just wanted to see some signs of life. And you got more than that in the ways that you just broke down. So, signs of life.
Hey, let me switch gears here with you. Unless you have something else to add on Chase Burns.
No.
So let's do a jump in the river update. So the Reds have, if they win, as we speak here, they've only played one game so far in this Boston series. So they still got a chance to win the series. They've won 6 out of 7 series as we talk, but they've also lost 2 out of the last 3 games, I believe. And so we've got this running bet that if they make the playoffs, I jump in a river. And if they don't, you jump in a river. How you feeling about needing to buy a swimsuit?
Gordon, I'm comfortable, you know, with where we're at today. The Reds are 2.5 back in the wild card. St. Louis finally lost last night. The Padres are going through a rough stretch, thanks due in part to the work of the Reds at Great American Ballpark this past weekend.
Yes,
I feel pretty good. How are you feeling, Gordon?
Well, I'm going to give you a little credit for the side you took on this, because they're playing better right now than I anticipated when we made this bet. And I don't, barring some injury setbacks or something like that, I don't see them falling off the table.
And
thanks to, you know, teams like Atlanta just going nowhere this year, and Padres struggling, and Arizona
Diamondbacks,
not doing what we thought, you know, they're in it. And matter of fact, this is really, I mean, take a look at the NL Central. We thought that was a shit division coming in, and we thought it was, if not the worst of the six, I mean, relatively, right, that it was one of the two worst. And yet here we are, two of those teams, if I'm not mistaken, they certainly entered the week in playoff position. They might still be in playoff position with the Reds right behind them. And I think they were the only team that had, or the only division that had, 4 teams with winning records in it.
Yeah.
And I believe that's still the case. So, you know, you got a team like the Reds that are in fourth place that just knocked off the Padres, just knocked off the Yankees in a series before that. They've played some good teams competitively. They beat Detroit in a series in Detroit. That's a team with the best record in baseball, you know, and so, and they've taken care of business against some of the bottom feeders. The big thing they haven't done is win in the division, but there's a lot of season left. So all that said, I still don't think I'm jumping in the river because there's too many teams to beat there, but I'm a lot more in buyer mode on these guys than sell mode compared to where I was maybe a month ago, which brings me to the next thing I was going to ask you, Mr. Homer. So you're the pro upside hoo-ha Reds fan here. So tell me if you want to avoid jumping in the river, what's your ball club need to do at the trade deadline? Are you buying? Well, I mean, you got to be buying because you don't want to jump in the river.
Yeah. I mean, the kind of the off ramp I have to answer that question is that I don't know. Of course, I think the Reds should buy. Will they buy? I don't know. But I would love to see, you know, especially, I don't know if there's been an update to Jake Fraley's situation since you've been in Boston. It sounds like he's going to avoid surgery, but
you're
or at least
to
that's
play through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right field feels like a big hole in this team right now. If they could go out and get a bat that can play right field every day, an everyday player, that would be real. That would make me feel really, really good going down the stretch here with our bet. You have to be buying. And I think that was in 2023, that was the really strange, disappointing thing that when the Reds came to that crossroads, they opted to just play out the string with what they had, and it wasn't enough. And my contention...
Well, they got Sam Ma.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But they didn't get the starting pitcher, to your point, that they needed.
Yeah. Yeah. My contention is always going to be, and there are data points to support this, it is always going to be worth just trying to get into that 16 playoff field. The first 2 years of it in the NL, the team that was in the third wild card spot won the league, won the pennant. So I think there is merit to going for it if you are close. And that brings me back to some of our oldest talking points from this season, Gordon, about urgency, about this team not winning a playoff series in 30 years. What are you waiting for? The thing that I'm interested to see over the course of, I mean, it feels like the Reds are taking this week by week, doesn't it, in terms of how they're evaluating their contender status?
I think, I've talked to some people. I think that's exactly how they're taking it. They probably won't pivot earnestly to substantive trade talks until after the draft, and they'll focus, and that's the Sunday, I believe Sunday. I believe it's the Sunday before the All-Star game.
So
And so that's coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then they'll start, you know, by then they'll have this road trip and another homestand in the bank. And that homestand, by the way, is Miami and Colorado. So it really makes this road trip the key to the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
In terms of how good you feel about yourself. If you can come off this road trip, even 500, and take care of business at home against those bottom feeder teams. And that's always easier said than done. But you come out, if you were to come out of that 5-6 games over 500, never mind, maybe a little bit more, maybe you've caught one of those teams in the division by then, you gotta be buyers. You gotta be all in trying to improve your deficits.
Now, Gordon, here's a question I had for you. If this comes down, if the Reds basically tread water with where they're at right now, they start approaching the trade deadline 2, 3, 4, 5 games over 500. The players on the field, the team as it's constituted today, haven't given you a definitive green light to go in either direction, and it's going to come down to a value assessment, a judgment call by the front office. Okay, this is the direction we're going to go. This is how we feel about this team. If the Reds tread water and don't improve or backtrack dramatically between now and when the trade market starts to heat up, which way do you think this front office would go? Which way are they leaning?
I think they would go modest buyers. And they tend to be modest anyway. But I think that would probably take off the table going really aggressive for any kind of big bat that they would need. I think, you mentioned the bat, and I agree with that. I don't care what position that guy plays. I mean, almost anything you can make work. You can shoehorn it into this lineup that, for the most part, is mix and match lineup anyway. I mean, you got catcher in middle infield and center field pretty well locked in.
That's true.
Everything
That's true.
else you can work with just about if it's the right bat. Now, that said, I also think that one thing you can't forget, and it's going to be as important, if not more important, is bullpen help. If they could get a significant leverage arm for the bullpen, that would go leaps and bounds toward being competitive. And I mean, look at what we're dealing with now. Ian Jabeau, another shoulder impingement thing. He's the guy that blew the save on opening day. He's been in your pen when he's been healthy. He's been okay. He's been fine. But he's not. As soon as he goes down, Joel Lesoras is up. Lesoras gives up some runs. I mean, pitches 3 innings yesterday, gives up some runs. He's okay. I mean, you got a handful of these guys. They're okay. But when you start getting into the heat of battle, and especially when you start managing down the stretch to win every day and then into the playoffs, those tend to be quicker hooks on the starter, tends to lean much harder on the bullpen. You're going to need arms. And so they have starting pitching, I think, that can compete. I think they have enough starting pitching to get there. I think there are contenders out there that are in better position than the Reds right now that would kill for the Reds rotation.
Oh,
But
God, yeah.
the Reds don't have a lot anywhere else. And that's where if they can stretch that rotation to that to more to closer to that strength for 9 innings, now you can almost get away with not adding a bat if you stay otherwise healthy. I mean, you're not going to score a ton of runs. You're going to be inconsistent, but that might be enough to get it done. So there's my 2 cents for what it's worth. Unfortunately, the Reds don't tend to spend much more than that. So I don't know what they're going to be in the market for. That's the thing
Yeah,
to work
that's
with.
kind of what I was thinking too. Right now it looks like they'll be in a position that would be suggestive of buying, but given the limitations they put on themselves, what does that look like? And I think you just broke that down pretty well. Modesty is the baseline. And if this team isn't, like really pulling itself into wild card contention and is just kind of floating above 500 as they have been for the last week or 10 days, I don't think there's a compelling case for this group of personnel decision makers to go out and make a big splash.
Yeah. I mean, if there's good news for the fans or the team where it sits right now, or maybe the guys in the clubhouse when they look ahead at what to expect, it's that Jason Williams and I, maybe we were a little premature in trying to sell off the whole damn team back in May.
You think
Hey, you heard it here first. I
in
agree.
May, in
In
May.
May. Now things can change in the next 2 weeks, and
Yeah.
maybe that is where
Yeah,
they end, but
I
it doesn't
mean,
look
look.
like it as we sit here now.
No, it doesn't, but I mean, if they go 2-4, or one, God forbid 1-5 on this road trip, which is very, not there's a non-zero chance of that happening. this starts to look a little different. And like you said, you've talked to people, and this is a week by week evaluation of where this team is at. They're on the knife's edge right now, really.
So this is where the starting pitching comes in, right? They haven't been swept in the series. Starting pitching keeps you out of losing streaks. Having a frontline guy or two keeps you out of losing streaks. So that gets me to the last thing here, Pat. You're going to be in Philly. We're going to tag team. You're going to pick up the team in Philly after I'm out of here in Boston. And that's when, at the end of the week, end of the weekend, we're going to find out who makes the All-Star team. I want your predictions. How many All-Stars do they get, and who?
I think, Gordon, when all is said and done, and you have, just everything, there's a shakeout process after the team is named, and guys
so
fill in.
About, like, injury replacements and stuff like that.
Yeah. I think
guys
all is said.
Guys that can't start in the guys that are scheduled to start on Sunday, so they won't be able to pitch in the All-Star game on
exactly. But I think Ellie De La Cruz finds his way there somehow. But the one guarantee for Reds fans, I think it's done already, and the player voting is done anyway. I think that went final on Sunday. I think Andrew Abbott will be the Cincinnati Reds lock all-star in Atlanta this year, and he's completely deserving.
So people who don't know, the player ballot does include, unlike the fan balloting, the player ballot does include a place for pitchers, and that includes a five-man rotation. You get to pick five starters.
So that's the thing. It's look, the competition for that is going to be really tight. And there are a lot of big splashy names for the the players to vote on. But you look at Andrew Abbott, the numbers that he's put up this year, everything is pointed in the right direction. And he's been dominant. He didn't break camp with the team. So if anything, maybe he's lacking in a few of the surface level counting stats, like his record. But since he started the year with two starts,
it's still 7-1.
He's 7-1, 1.79 ERA. The opponents are batting around 200 off of him. The guy has been dominant, and putting this back in a Reds context and less an All-Star context, he has been your, not only has he been your clear All-Star up to this, through the first half of the season, he's been your ace. He's been your stopper.
I agree with that.
He's been your stopper. He's answered as you like to say, he answers the bell every fifth day. He is the right stuff when it comes to what you want on your pitching staff. He's been excellent, and I will be shocked if he's not in Atlanta.
You know, this is crazy. I agree with you on both those guys. I do think Ellie De La Cruz is going to find a way to get there. But I wouldn't be shocked. Actually, I wouldn't be shocked if either one of these guys didn't make it. I'd be shocked if they both didn't make it. But because the Reds have to have somebody, and I don't know how you would pick somebody else and not pick one of those if it was about a mandatory pick.
Yeah.
But I could see the workload issues because Abbott's on the brink of qualifying innings. He's not quite there because he was, I think he came in at the end of the second rotation. So he's just shy of qualifying innings. And LA got off to a slow start, but his numbers are really good. The problem with him is he's got a couple of guys at shortstop that are going to beat him out. Plain and simple. So then he's got to be third. He's got to find a way to be the third shortstop, essentially. So I could see either one possibly not making it. I think those are your two best bets.
Yeah.
So if we both agree on that, who would be, like, if there's a third candidate, who would be the third best candidate for them?
Yeah. And I liked his candidacy up until the last homestand. And he's been great. He's been super consistent. But I was a little put off in terms of all-star candidacy with the way TJ Friedel played the last homestand in the field. And he's been great. He's been so good in the field all season. So maybe I'm nitpicking and being unfair there. But I think TJ Friedel is your kind of third in line there. I mean, he's man, does he make it seem easy for the Cincinnati Reds offense?
He had another bunt hit Monday.
It was
That's
great.
six.
Yeah.
He's
Super
tied for
smart.
second in the majors in bunt hits, and he's got seven or eight home runs over the wall. So, you talk about the smallest of small ball, and then he's also got a little pop, and he's an igniter at the top of the lineup. Plus, he's got a manager that believes in him against left-handers, and it's paid off.
I mean, the Reds, starting this road trip, Gordon, the Reds were leading the NL in runs scored in the first inning. TJ Friedel is a big part of that. He scored
That's
48
TJ
runs.
Friedel. Yeah.
Yeah, he scored 48. Just this all he makes this offense, he makes it look so he made it look so easy, especially on the last homestand. They were able to jump on some of those good the two good teams they had in there. The Reds were able to bounce back or jump on the Yankees and the Padres early because of TJ Friedel. He scored 48 runs this year. He's on pace to almost he might score 100 runs this year. He's over 300, I think, for the season.
He's close to it. Yeah, he might be right on that.
283. So not as close as I thought, but
Well, these
his
days that's
OP
300.
What's that?
Nowadays that's basically 300.
Yeah, really. His OPS is 800. He's been
Okay.
Mr. Consistency.
That said, you're wrong. Now I disagree with you, because the guy that the third best candidate they've got is Emilio Pagan, Mr. Closer by necessity, who's done one hell of a job, and he hasn't been Mariano Rivera, but he's been a hell of a lot more than Alexis Diaz, and if they didn't have him, I don't know what they'd be doing at the end of the games, but I don't think they'd be pulling him out. Now is he going to get recognized for that? I don't know. Not a lot of, not a ton of bullpen guys get in there, but I think he's, I don't know that either one of those guys makes it, those third possibilities, but I think Pagan's a little bit above Friedel in my mind. So there you go, for what it's worth.
That's a 18 out of 21 saves converted. Emilio's had a fantastic second half, hasn't he? Or first half, hasn't he?
Yeah, and one of those blown saves was a four-out deal where he got ambushed by Nolan Arenado on a leadoff homer in the ninth after getting out of a jam in the eighth. And then so he retired four out of five guys he faced. And then, that's the nature of that job. Well, there you go. That's all. I mean, we should we'll find out before our next podcast. We'll know.
It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
So anyway, that'll probably do it for us, unless you got something else, Pat. I mean, oh, wait. Now I know you're visiting family right now, and so Barney's not around, right? You got Barney with you?
He's nearby, but
Oh, okay.
he's not in the picture. He's not at hand
But you do
right
have
now.
something else in the picture. Show us
Oh,
that
God.
trophy back there, man. Is that a baseball trophy? Is that your baseball trophy? Are you a champion? Are you a baseball champion?
Gordon, I'm not. You might see that says second place. This,
Oh.
Gordon, in
Hey, did
eighth
you get a
grade.
wild card? Did you guys get a wild card?
No, we didn't have enough teams. Everyone qualified. Gordon, in eighth grade, in spring baseball, my team reached the championship round of my local kind of teener league.
And Fantastic.
I was actually scheduled to pitch the decisive game three. Gordon, I was too nervous. I couldn't do it.
What?
I was scared. I had anxiety off the charts about in eighth grade. What was?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I couldn't. I begged my manager to scratch me, and ultimately he did, and he was very upset to do it. He said he'd never scratched a youth baseball player in his life from a start, and I was the first. But I just couldn't bring myself to start that decisive game three.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so this...
Oh, wow.
Maybe related.
So you guys lost because you were the best pitcher.
This is a runner-up trophy, Gordon.
Well, I'm glad you've gotten over that phobia.
Yeah, I didn't have to worry. I didn't have too many more consequential pitching decisions to make as my life kind of made the turn into high school.
All right. Well, great story. Well, you're full of great stories, man.
Ah, thanks, man. You are too.
Full of something. All right, man. Well, that should probably be enough for anybody that's stuck with us this long to listen to this episode.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll call it a wrap on this week's episode of the Big Pod Machine. For our great producer, Phil Didion, and my co-host, Pat Brennan, I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you next week.